you wrote this book, The Legendary Harry Carey, Baseball's Greatest Salesman. Why did you write it?
Harry is a pretty famous person in the broadcasting field. He died in 1998. He's in no danger of being forgotten. There's a statue of him outside of Wrigley Field, the Cubs ballpark in Chicago. When the Cubs play the seventh inning stretch song, Take Me Out to the Ball Game, that Harry made famous by leading the crowd, they often just show a video of him leading the crowd. I felt that he is now remembered mostly for his Cub years when he was a kind of grandfatherly figure. And he also becomes something of a figure of fun. There were Will Ferrell imitations of him. He mangled names toward the end of his career. He forgot things. That really wasn't the whole Harry. That really wasn't the best Harry. He broadcast for over 50 years. He broadcast significantly for three major league teams, the Cardinals and the White Sox, as well as the Cubs. Those stories are equally fascinating as his Cub years are. And also his own personal story is almost Dickensian. It's a fascinating story. I really wanted to put the whole Harry into perspective and to tell his complete life story.
So if you could give me a Cliff Notes version of what people don't talk about, what they don't remember, and what you wanted them to know about those early years. Why is that? Why do you think they remember those later years and not those early years?
Toward the end of his years with the Cubs in particular, he became a national cable TV star. WGN, which is the Cubs' home station, was able to be broadcast throughout the country. So people everywhere in America could watch Cub games on a daily basis and watch and listen to Harry. He became so famous that he appeared on shows like David Letterman. He actually led the Democratic delegates at the 1996 convention in Chicago and singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game. He sang that song with Robert Merrill of the New York Opera. He was just a legendary figure, but that fame was so great that I really think that the rest of the story is in danger of being forgotten a little bit.
So what do you think people should know?
First of all, his personal story. He was born in 1914, which is the year that World War I started. He never knew his father. His father went away to World War I, was an immigrant from Europe, actually probably born in Albania, although I think his heritage was Italian. Harry really never knew his father because his father never came back from World War I. Harry didn't know whether he died or lived. There's still a mystery about that because all record of him has disappeared. He was raised by his mother, who was also a European immigrant and very poor. His mother became seriously ill. She remarried when Harry was an adolescent, but then died 2 years later. He was raised by a paternal uncle and his aunt, and then the uncle left. So Harry really had a very difficult childhood, had a lot to overcome in his life. It really affected his private life a lot. Publicly, he was this outgoing, personable guy, friend of everyone, could connect with strangers easily. Privately, with his own family, he had much more difficulty. In the book, I talked at some length with both his widow, Dutchie, and with his grandson, Chip, who is also a broadcaster, now works for the Atlanta Braves. And Chip kind of put it in perspective when he said, Harry never had trouble being Harry. He had a lot of trouble being dad or grandfather. But toward the end of his life, he was really able to warm up to and connect with his own family to a significant degree. Almost became a different person by the time that he died in his 80s.
And that charisma, what do you think made him so fascinating to people?
Well, Harry always said that he felt like he was the voice of the fans and that he considered himself a fan behind the mic. And not so much in his Cub years, but especially during his White Sox and Cardinal years, he was completely unfiltered about expressing his opinions about what was happening on the field. If he felt the player wasn't hustling or playing well, Harry would openly criticize him. If he was feeling that the management of the team wasn't doing enough to make the team better, he would express his opinions on the air. And that really became something that made him beloved to fans because they felt that he was their voice. There's an incident in the book where the White Sox were finishing a very dismal year when Harry was broadcasting for him. The last game of the season, instead of broadcasting the game, he went down into the stands during the last three innings and just interviewed fans and said, what do you think about this team? How do you think they're going to improve? What do you feel about them now and about next year? And he really gave voice to their own opinions. That's something that Harry was absolutely brilliant at.
You wrote the book because you wanted these stories to be told.
I did. And also, I was a Chicago boy. And I have to tell you that I have been a White Sox lifelong fan, really, from the time that I started following baseball in the 1950s. And a big story in the book, and a big part of Harry's own story in broadcasting, was that after spending 11 years with the White Sox, he switched to the Cubs and became much more famous and popular with the Cubs than he ever was with the White Sox, in part because of the whole Wrigley Field persona, and also especially because the Cubs were such a nationally known team by being broadcast coast to coast. I felt that his White Sox years, which were equally compelling, were being left a little bit in the background. Those years were simply fascinating. The White Sox often had a bad team. Harry was totally unafraid to criticize the players and even the management. He called his own owner an idiot because he felt that the owner wasn't doing enough to improve the team. And those years were so interesting and compelling that I really felt that that part of the story should be told equally as much as the Cubs story was.
So was he not open and opinionated and the voice of the fans when he was the Cubs broadcaster?
He was still, but not to the degree that he was with the White Sox. I think that there's documentation that I talk about in the book that when he moved to the Cubs management kind of quietly called him aside and said, Harry, we want you to be honest. We don't yet want you to be afraid to criticize players when they do something wrong, but you really have to get out of attacking people personally. And the management of the team was pretty much off limits as far as criticism was concerned. Not completely, but certainly not to the degree that that was the case with the White Sox. And also, he was older. He was so popular. He was having fun broadcasting the games. And also in his personal life, as I mentioned before, he was a happier person. I think he didn't have the sort of edge that he had during his White Sox years and during his Cardinal years as well.
I read, anyway, that he was deathly afraid of cows, but he kind of coined the phrase, holy cow, made it famous. How did you come upon that little fact?
Well, as Harry became kind of a national celebrity with the Cubs, he started getting offers for commercial products. And there was a soft drink company in the Chicago area that wanted to market a soft drink called Holy Cow. And they were going to have Harry's picture on the containers. And as part of the opening launch of the product, they decided that it would be fun to show Harry with a cow and have him kind of walking a few steps and leading the cow by the rope. The Chicago media person that I talked to that was working on that promotion said Harry was so afraid of cows that he wouldn't come anywhere near it. And so that promotional project kind of fell flat, and the soft drink ultimately was not very successful.
How did you get the information for your book? Did you just interview people that knew him from all parts of his life?
Well, I'm retired now, but I worked in sports broadcasting for a long time. And WGN TV was actually a client of the company that I worked for, which is called Stats LLC. And a lot of my job was interacting with broadcasters and broadcasting crews. So I knew a lot of the people that Harry worked with. In fact, his grandson, Chip, because he broadcast for WGN, and because his current team, the Braves, were a client of our company, I knew Chip personally. I knew Tom Brenneman, who was another broadcaster who worked in Chicago with Harry. A lot of the guys that Harry worked with, I was able to use my personal connections to get interviews with them. Some of the other people I was able to contact just through teams and newspapers and just digging out information. Harry's wife, Dutchie, was an amazing person to interview. She's, I believe, 90 or 91 years old now, still lively, still fun and full of life, and you could really see why she had such a positive influence on Harry. The St. Louis years were much harder because most of those people are deceased by now. So I did a lot of newspaper research. I did have a few contacts in the St. Louis area, like Tim McCarver was another broadcaster who I worked with on Fox Broadcast, and Tim was playing for the Cardinals before he became a broadcaster, and Tim was able to share his personal feelings about how the players felt about Harry. So it took quite a bit of work. I think the St. Louis part was the hardest.
Thank you so much, Don, for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you, Sharon.